I grew up in church pretty much all my life, and I heard common phrases like, quote, the New Testament church, or we are a New Testament church here, or finally, things like, we want to be an Acts 2 church. You may have heard a similar phrase. I never thought to question this notion of the church's inception being found in the book of Acts until recently, though. And it turns out I may have been wrong. The first time we find the English word church, C-H-U-R-C-H, in the entire Bible is in Matthew 16, where Jesus is having an exchange with Peter and says the all too familiar phrase, on this rock I will build my English word church. At first blush, one would read the Bible in English and determine something similar to Lewis Chafer's conclusion as he writes, quote, an entirely new word is used. It would seem that there should be no confusion of what this word represents with any Old Testament revelation. His conclusions back in 1915 are not unique. In a study conducted in 1958, Roy Ward of Abilene Christian University wrote, following the earthly ministry of Jesus, there arose an institution in response to his person and his mission. This institution was a community of persons who sustained a certain relationship to Jesus Christ, and it existed by virtue of that relationship. The most common term used to describe this institution was ecclesia, which we translate as church. Many theologians with limited resources and access to the original languages in which the Bible was written have come to a lot of faulty conclusions and theological frameworks, one of which being that where Israel failed, the church will succeed, or something like, there was an age of law in Israel, but now there is an age of church and grace. Today, in the age of all things digital, we can click a mouse less than 10 times and view original biblical manuscripts. And we can read transliterations, and we can audit those long-standing conclusions that have been handed down to us by our predecessors. As Daniel 12:4 puts it, knowledge shall increase. With increased knowledge comes increased responsibility, however. So I pose the question in kind of a posthumous challenge to Lewis Chafer and many other theologians before and after him. Was that an entirely new word? Sure, we can't find the English word church prior to its usage in Matthew 16. But was the Bible written in English? Don't we have to kind of dig deeper and lift the veil through which we've been kissing our bride, the scriptures? So we kind of stand at a crossroads. Do we dig deeper and potentially threaten our long-standing dispensational concepts of this church age? Or do we continue to operate under the notion that what we've been taught is just 100% true? I'm going to go with what 2 Timothy 2:15 says. Do your best to present yourself to God as one approved, a worker who has no need to be ashamed, rightly handling or rightly dividing the word of truth. For some of you, this is probably already old information. And for others, this may be very shocking and new. The Old Testament was written primarily in Hebrew, and the New Testament primarily in Greek, even though we have some inkling that maybe some of the books were spoken in Aramaic or maybe even written down in Hebrew, but all of the surviving manuscripts we have in the New Testament are in Greek. So these two languages in which the Bible was written are both very different languages. One's, you know, Greek, and the other one's a Semitic language. So in the New Testament, for example, we have words which were spoken in Hebrew or Aramaic, which are two similar languages, but they were recorded or written down, or we could say clothed in Greek. We have characters who, for the most part, thought like Hebrews and studied the Hebrew scriptures, yet had their stories and their words recorded in a completely different language. Don't get me wrong, this was for the better, as it enabled the gospel to spread rapidly across Asia Minor and Rome. We run into problems, however, when we find, quote, new words like the word church and have no record of them being used in the Testament written in Hebrew. Fortunately, we have a version of the Old Testament in Greek. See, this translation of the Old Testament is called the Septuagint, so-called because 70 rabbis put their heads together in a translation process of the text. This is a great tool with which we can pull words from the Greek back into the Hebrew. And this gives us the ability to find the Hebrew equivalent for most Greek words found in the New Testament. So let's get digging. The Greek word behind the English, quote, church in Matthew 16 is ekklesia, like we discussed earlier. Ekklesia just means the called forth ones or the set apart ones. So in order for the church age theory, the theory which submits that God started a new age of the church, which through the replacement of Israel serves as a new vehicle for the gospel and plays a different set of rules, in order for all of that to hold water at this point, there needs to be an absence of this Greek term anywhere in the Hebrew Bible, in the Old Testament. So let's test it and see if that holds water. By searching for the Greek word ekklesia in the Old Testament, you know, in the Septuagint, right? One comes upon its usage in Deuteronomy 31:30, which reads, "Then Moses spoke these words in a song until they were finished in the ears of all the ekklesia of Israel." He then goes on to recite the famous song of Moses, which begins a chapter later in Deuteronomy 32. So why didn't the translators, when translating the Bible into English, decide to translate this usage of ekklesia as the English word church? Conversely, why didn't the translators translate ekklesia in Matthew 16 as assembly? See, there's kind of an inconsistency here. So let's get digging. The second notable usage of ekklesia in the Hebrew Bible is found in Joshua 8, verses 34 and 35, which read, "And afterward he read all the words of the Torah, the law, the blessing and the curse, according to all that is written in the book of the Torah. There was not a word of all that Moses commanded that Joshua did not read before all the ekklesia of Israel, and the women and the little ones and the sojourners who lived among them." So again, we have another inconsistency here. I would add that if the translators were consistent in their work, these aforementioned verses would create some significant problems in the church's theology. So the Hebrew word that's equivalent with this ekklesia is the Hebrew word kahal. In other words, kahal is the Hebrew word the 70 rabbis determine would best be represented by the Greek word ekklesia. Okay, so think kahal equals ekklesia. Ekklesia equals kahal. Just two different languages. Kahal, as best as I could count, is found 80 times in the Hebrew Bible, and not a single instance is it translated as the English word church. It is always found in the English as the word assembly or congregation. Surely this is just a mishap or an oversight on the English translator's part, right? Well, what if we test the Greek ekklesia in the same manner, but in the New Testament? The Greek ekklesia is used 114 times in the New Testament, and 111 of those instances it's translated as this new English word. You guessed it, church. So why did they go with church all of a sudden? Why didn't they stick with consistency and go with like assembly or congregation? And then why are there three ekklesias in the New Testament that are not translated as church? Well, we're going to answer those questions. The first time that we see ekklesia translated something other than church in the New Testament is actually found in Acts 19. A silversmith named Demetrius, who made a living making shrines and idols of the goddess Artemis, apparently got really worked up that Paul was telling others and was teaching the Ephesians to turn away from their idol worship and towards the one true God of Israel. Demetrius stirs up this crowd against Paul and is concerned that his business will go under due to this truth being taught. And he's worried for his business and his local economy. So the townspeople join in. They beg Paul to stay away from the theater in Ephesus as his words might damage the local economy, which was based largely on the manufacturing and the selling of idols. In verse 32 of chapter 19, we see the ecclesia was in confusion. Some were shouting one thing and some another. Most of the people did not even know why they were there. So this same ecclesia that shouted for 2 hours, in verse 34, they were shouting, "Great is Artemis the Ephesian of the Ephesians." So obviously that would be problematic if we translated the word ecclesia there in Acts chapter 19 as church. But the second time this ecclesia was not translated as church is in the same story but found later in verse 39. So it would obviously be very problematic if the translator decided to translate ecclesia as church here, as these were clearly a group of pagan idol worshipers. The translators can't even have, they can't have a church hailing Artemis, right? Interestingly, though, we see Stephen, when making his final defense before being stoned to death, he uses ecclesia when referring to a time when Israel was in the wilderness. Surely the translators would do Stephen justice and consistently translate this occurrence of ecclesia as church, right? This is even in the New Testament. It's written in Greek. But no, because it doesn't fit the narrative of the church replacement theology, Stephen's usage of ecclesia here is translated as assembly and congregation by all the English translations except the King James Version. So we can clearly see that the, quote, church is nothing new, as Stephen would make the claim. God's ecclesia, or called out ones, were in existence prior to Acts chapter 2, and this is in no way a kind of a new entity. Another great example of translators' bias can be found in James 2, verses 2 through 4, which reads, "For if a man wearing a gold ring and a fine clothing comes into your assembly, and a poor man in shabby clothing comes in as well, and if you pay attention to the one who wears the fine clothing and say, 'Sir, sit here in a good place,' while you say to the poor man, 'You, stand over there,' or 'Sit down at my feet,' have you not then made distinction among yourselves and become judges with evil thoughts?" And this is the ESV translation that I just read. One would think that the Greek word behind the English assembly that I just said was the word ecclesia, right? Because they're coming into like this Christian church. It's after the death, burial, and resurrection of our master. So clearly they're all just practicing this new thing called church, right? But upon further investigation, reveals that James employs the Greek synagogen. Synagogen is used 56 times in the New Testament alone. It is not a single, in not a single English translation do we find this Greek word transliterated as synagogue in this particular verse in James 2. Keep in mind, too, that James is writing to the 12 tribes in dispersion and using synagogue here in a positive and possessive context by saying your synagogues, not their synagogues. So it's important to note he is not just writing to a Jewish audience within Jerusalem. This is reminiscent of Acts 15, when the Jerusalem Council expected Gentiles coming to faith in Messiah to be in the synagogues every Sabbath, hearing Moses, aka the Torah, taught. So 56-1, the translators decided to stray from their consistent translation here in this future tense admonition of the Messianic believers. I would submit that this too does not fit the narrative. The translators can't have the early believers and followers of Jesus meeting in synagogues. That's what the Jews did. We, however, are the new deal. We're plan B, right? They especially can't have the head of the Jerusalem church, as they would call it, speaking to believers who are still meeting in synagogues on the Sabbath of all things. But let's give the translators the benefit of the doubt. Maybe they translated all the other occurrences of synagogen as assembly. Let's take a look. Hebrews 10:25. We find a varied cognate of the Greek synagogue, but the translators choose the English "don't forsake the assembling of one another together," instead of choosing "don't forget to synagogue with each other." Another blatant inconsistency. The translators did, however, choose to be consistent in Acts 19, verses 8 and 9. And here's why. "And Paul entered the synagogue, and for 3 months spoke boldly, reasoning and persuading them about the kingdom of God. But when some became stubborn and continued in unbelief, speaking evil of the way before the congregation, he withdrew from them and took the disciples with him, reasoning daily in the hall of Tyrannus." So you can see an intentional and fabricated rift being created by the translational bias in all of our English Bibles. Two, last notable occurrences of the Greek synagogue in which the translators maintained the meeting can be found in Revelation 2:9 and Revelation 3:9. So, two other places where the Greek word synagogen is used and they decided to keep it a synagogue, both speak of and are calling it the synagogue of Satan. You might think, well, Gabe, wasn't there a new covenant made? There is something new going on, right? There's something. Yes, absolutely. There is a new covenant that was initiated, but was that new covenant made with this entity called the church? Was it a new thing? Was it plan B? Was it like, let's scrap Israel for a little while and go with this new thing called the church that's going to play by a completely different set of rules? Let's start a new religion? Well, let's take a look. Let's read Jeremiah 31. The days are coming, declares the Lord, when I will make a new covenant with the people of Israel and the people of Judah. It would not be like the covenant I made with their ancestors when I took them by the hand to lead them out of Egypt, because they broke that covenant, though I was a husband to them, declares the Lord. This is the covenant I will make with the people of Israel after that time, declares the Lord. I will put my Torah in their minds and write it on their hearts, and I will be their God, and they will be my people. So we can see here that the new covenant is made with the house of Israel and the people of Judah. There isn't any mention of a New Testament church or a new entity or a new religion or a plan B separate from the commonwealth and the family of Israel. So what's the lesson here? Well, for one, we see the translators taking great liberty in what they translate as church and what they translate as assembly and what they translate as synagogue. In other words, if it fits their narrative, if it fits the narrative of replacement theology, then we'll go and move forward with it, right? So, if we are to walk in the spirit of 2 Timothy 2:15 and 1 Thessalonians 5:21, we are to test and examine everything that is handed to us and called truth. Nothing escapes from Paul's injunction to test everything. In this particular case, we see that there is and there was an agenda which started back in the early years of our movement, once called the Way, and further compounded by Constantine and other notable anti-Semites which crept into the body of Messiah. This dichotomy was created to distance Christianity from all things Jewish and prove the church is a new and improved Israel 2.0. Move over Israel and make room for the church. Our more evolved cerebral capacities have enabled us to be the true children of God, as opposed to the limited capacity of the Jews. So Christianity has been sold and subsequently embraced a hybrid form of Christian Darwinism, and it has applied it to their theology and translations of the scripture. Fortunately, there is time to return to our roots and embrace our true heritage, which we've so desperately tried to sever for the past 2,000 years. So in conclusion, I would submit that the, quote, church age began long before our religious leaders have led us to believe, and the evidence lies just below the surface.